Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and welcome to the Box Hard Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Mikey Garcia.
This is the monster from the swamp, Regis Ruru Progre.
Hey, what's up? This is King Carlos Molina, former IBF world champ.
This is Michael, the bounty hunter, 2012 Olympian and your people's champ.
This is Charlie Edwards, flyweight champion of the world.
This is Fast Eddie Chambers, and you're listening to the Box Hard Podcast with my main man, Joey Cosmo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 394 of the Box Hard Podcast. I'm your host, Joey Coastman. I'm joined, as ever, by former heavyweight world title challenger, my good man, Mr. Fast Eddie Chambers. Eddie, how you doing this week, my man?
I'm doing great, my man. How about you?
Always good when speaking with you, Eddie. Always good when speaking with you. I feel like I've said this many, many times in the past, but I really feel like this podcast is going to be a very quick one, a bite-sized podcast. Not much at all to review, so I'm going to fly through that. We're going to start here with a card that took place on Friday, April 28th for the eSpace Mayenne in Lavelle, Mayenne, France. Over here, we had Jordy Wise move to 30-0 with a draw. He took on John Miguez, who was 17-0. Somebody's O must go, as they say, but nobody's O went because it ended in a split draw over 12 rounds for the vacant EBU European welterweight title. It's kind of frustrating when there's a vacant title on the line and a fight ends, you know, in a draw, because obviously the title remains vacant. No one takes it home. But anyways, a lot of people felt that Wise probably did enough just to nick it. But yeah, there were scorecards for him, scorecards for Miguez as well. I think quite a wide one. I think, if I'm not mistaken, 117, 111 for Miguez, which I think, you know, from what I've heard, what I've seen, that one seems a bit of a crazy card. But anyways, yeah, no one wins. They both rack up a draw, unfortunately. No one wants that. And yeah, the EBU European welterweight title remains vacant. That's it for that one. Moving now to another part of France, and it's another massive shout here for upset of the year. It's certainly going on my shortlist. We had former world champion Nordine Ubali. I said it on last week's show. He hadn't been seen since getting knocked out and losing his world title to Nonito Donaire 2 years ago. He had 2 years out of the ring. He returned here at the Salle Gaillante. In France, and he got in there with what I described as an easy touch, Ricardo Martinez. He was 9-9. Anyway, an absolutely mega upset there. Ubali loses a split decision over 8 rounds to Ricardo Martinez, who's now 10-9. He's now gone into a positive there. He's got more wins than losses. And Nordine Ubali now 17-2. So yeah, a huge upset there on the cards. That's it for that one. Moving now to the final card to mention. Like I say, there wasn't too much to go over at all. This one took place at the College Park Center in Arlington, Texas, USA. It was on DAZN. It was an Oscar De La Hoya promotions card, Golden Boy. On the undercard, we saw David Stevens, a prospect, move to 13-0. A lot of people felt he'd get Marco Antonio Pereban out of there, but no, he was able to beat him unanimously over 8 rounds. Marco Antonio Pereban, now 26-7 with a draw. Had some moments, actually, Pereban, which no one really expected him to have. Like I say, David Stevens, I hadn't seen him before, and obviously I knew he was, you know, supposedly quite a bit of a puncher, and I expected him to, you know, to get him out as well, really. He's only 22 years of age. He had 9 KOs from 12 wins, but no, he goes the distance there over 8. Yeah, I guess invaluable experience, really banking some rounds against Pereban, who's a little bit of a veteran. Diego De La Hoya as well, another upset on the cards. He was knocked out in 2 rounds by Victor Morales, who's now 18-0 with a draw. Diego De La Hoya was the big favourite. It was for the vacant WBA Intercontinental Featherweight title. Diego De La Hoya now 24-2, knocked out in round 2 against Victor Morales. Like I say, an upset there, because Diego De La Hoya was the big favorite, actually. And some people were saying, like we're saying it in the week, you know, don't sleep on Morales. I feel like he could pull it up. He could pull it off. He could pull off the upset, and he certainly did. And yeah, in dramatic fashion. And then the main event, William Zepeda. He's now 28-0. A KO for him in round two against Jaime Arboleda. Now 19-3. All three losses by knockout. I said it on last week's show. I said Zepeda went on this heck of a run, knocking everyone out. People were saying he's perhaps a, you know, an opponent for Gervonta Tank Davis in the future, maybe someone who can give him issues. Everyone was saying that when he was banging everyone out, but then when he went the distance twice, you know, two fights back to back, it's funny in boxing. Boxing fans are real harsh sometimes, and everyone kind of stopped talking about the Gervonta Tank Davis fight all of a sudden. And I said he's going to probably bounce back here and get another knockout, and, you know, it's going to be in good fashion, and it was. Arboleda down three times in that second round. Yeah, Zepeda back with a bang, like I say, now 28-0. Yeah, just a dangerous fighter. I think he really can cause anyone trouble at lightweight. Obviously a southpaw, he can punch with both hands. And yeah, as expected, he got the knockout. I thought that was going to happen all day long, and it did, so that was that. But that is it, though, for the review part of the show. Like I said, there really wasn't too much to go over. That's it, though, for that. The final thing for me to do in this part is to welcome this week's special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the former WBA Super Flyweight World Champion. It is, of course, Mr. Andrew Maloney. Andrew, welcome back on the show, my man. It's been a while.
Hey, Joe, thanks for having me, mate. Appreciate having me back on.
Hey, it's always a pleasure speaking with you, Andrew. So we last spoke back in November 2020, so just over 2.5 years, thereabouts. At that time, you just had the no contest with Joshua Franco. You'd stated that there was some unseen footage that you felt sure would get the result overturned into a win for yourself. You also spoke of a possible third fight that could take place in Australia. Obviously, the result wasn't overturned. It was BS, and the third fight ended up being in Tulsa, which you lost unanimously. It's very much in the past now, Andrew, but obviously we haven't spoke since those times. I just wanted to ask, how hard was it to put that Maloney Franco chapter to bed? Because yeah, you should have definitely won that second fight, and unfairly were robbed of that, but again, you can't waste too much time fighting the same guy, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tricky one. Like, you know, I suppose it does feel like it's in the past now, but at the same time, it's still something that I think about almost every day. And still, you know, kicking myself that I didn't win that third fight, and obviously that I didn't get the right decision in that second fight. I know 100% that the damage to the eye was from a punch and there was no head clash, but yeah, I suppose, I mean, I've just got to put it in the past, but I definitely use it as motivation every day in the gym to work harder and make sure that that doesn't happen again, but ultimately to make sure that I become world champion again. And now I've worked very hard since that trilogy with Franco to put myself back in position to fight for world title. And now we're almost there, 2.5 weeks till I have that chance to, then I'll finally put that to bed and I can, you know, I can move past it once I've got that world title strapped back around my waist. And that's what I've been working for, we're almost there now, so I just can't wait.
And like you say, since that period in your career, you've put together 4 wins in a row. Those 4 wins lead us into this next fight. Obviously, you touched on it. May 20th, you'll be boxing at the MGM Grand against Junto Nakatani for the vacant WBO Super Flyweight World title. Obviously, Andrew, it's your chance to become a 2-time world champion. And yeah, I know you've been super eager to get this, you know, this second shot. How excited are you now that, as you say, it's only 2.5 weeks away?
Yeah, it's I honestly couldn't be more excited for this. It really does feel right. It feels like this is how everything's supposed to be and how my story was supposed to play out, to fight now for world title at the MGM Grand on a huge show like this, the Lomachenko Haney card, which is going to be watched by millions of people around the world, against an undefeated fighter, someone who's fairly avoided. Feels like this is how you're supposed to, you know, become world champion, and it's going to be very, very special, especially, you know, what I've been through in the past, everything that we just mentioned with Franco just makes this, will make this victory even sweeter. And then on top of that, my brother Jason, twin brother Jason, who's fighting for a world title just 1 week before me on May 13, it really feels like this is our story. We've always dreamed of both being world champions at the same time, and to have the opportunity to do it just 1 week apart just feels really special. And as I said, just feels like this is our story and how it was supposed to play out, and just can't wait for it. Just so excited.
No, I can hear the excitement in your voice, and I'm really pleased for the pair of you. Your opponent, Junto Nakatani, obviously the favourite with the bookies. However, he is coming up, obviously, from the weight below, from flyweight, a weight he held the WBO title at. Tell me, Andrew, how much do you know about this, obviously, unbeaten Japanese southpaw?
Yeah, I know quite a lot. I mean, I knew quite a lot of him before the fight was sort of put together. I'm a big boxing fan and total professional. So I always keep an eye on the sort of the top guys around my division and in my division. And, knew who Nakatani was and seen quite a few of his fights. And then obviously since this fight got made, have studied him a lot since then. And yeah, I know basically everything about him now. I've watched his fight so many times, and we've, broken down his strengths and weaknesses and put together a really good game plan, I believe, to make sure that I get this job done and I come home with that world title with me on the plane back to Australia.
And I'm going to throw a bit of trivia at you now, actually. According to your record, Andrew, you've only boxed one southpaw as a pro. I was wondering if you knew who it was.
Yeah, that's correct. Chris Alfonte, I think his name's pronounced. Quite a long time ago. I was due to fight another southpaw, and the fight ended up falling over and had a change of opponents. But I've done, quite a lot of work with southpaws in the gym over the years and fought a lot of southpaws as an amateur fighter. But, yeah, this camp has been a little bit different. We've known about this fight for a long time now, so had the opportunity to get a lot of great sparring in with tall southpaws that are very similar to Nakatani. So now it's not even really something that I think about, the southpaw thing. It's just second nature now. And, it's actually been quite refreshing to have a camp that it is a little bit different and you're working on new tricks and different things. It's been pretty refreshing. And, I'm looking forward to the challenge of fighting a tall southpaw in this fight.
And I know that this could come across as a bit of a silly question, but are you expecting this to be tougher than, any other fight you've had in your career? Obviously, you've done the rounds with Franco. Do you feel like this is going to be a tougher task?
Yeah, I do. That's in my head. I've preparing this is going to be the toughest fight of my career. Mentally preparing myself for anything that can happen in the ring. But you just never know until you actually get in the ring with someone how the fight's going to play out. But yeah, I've prepared very, very hard for this. It's been a long, hard training camp with lots of tough sparring. Because of Nakatani's height, generally sparring guys a fair bit heavier. So it's there's been a lot of hard work put into this camp. I'm going in there mentally prepared for the hardest fight of my career. But we'll just have to see how it plays out once we get in the ring together.
And as you said, you're boxing on that Haney Lomachenko undercard. The main event is surely going to be a real exciting fight. You said you're a boxing fan. How do you see that one playing out, Andrew?
Yeah, that's right. Stoked to be involved in such a huge card. But then, as a fan of the sport, being able to watch that fight live is also something that's pretty exciting. So really looking forward to it. I've changed my mind multiple times about who's going to win the fight. At the moment, my head's thinking that Haney's going to get the job done, a 12-round points decision, and just be able to keep Lomachenko at the end of his great jab and his height and reach advantage. Keeping Haney, obviously, a very slick, skillful boxer. I see him possibly just been able to control this fight and outbox Lomachenko at long range. But we'll have to wait and see. It can certainly go both ways. And, looking forward to see how that fight unfolds as well.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a real chess match. And obviously, you touched on it earlier on. Obviously, your twin brother, Jason, You know, identical twins, identical boxing records, 25-2. You're both coming off four wins in a row. You're both fighting for vacant WBO titles in the USA in the month of May against Asian fighters. Sometimes I think you're both the same person, to be quite honest. But one thing you do not have in common is that obviously you're the only brother to be a world champion so far. He gets his chance, you touched on it, to get in those history books May the 14th, so the week before, or sorry, May the 13th, the week before your fight. How's he getting on, Andrew? I'm guessing you're both training side by side in Vegas together.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we've been training together, and it's just, yeah, I think it couldn't have worked out any better the way this is. We get to do the training camp together and both be preparing for world titles, which obviously makes it even just even more special and just a great vibe in the training camp. And yeah, I'm just, he's honestly boxing so well and has done this whole camp. He realizes that this is his third time at a third shot of the world title, and he needs to win this fight, and he's taking this camp very, very serious. And yeah, he's boxing better than ever right now, and I'm very, very confident that he'll get the job done and become world champion on May 13. And then, yeah, 1 week later, I get my chance to do the same, and it will just be so special when we get this done and go back home to Australia with our friends and family and put on a big celebration with the team.
And when training side by side, Andrew, I know that obviously you push each other, and I wanted to ask as well, when you guys push each other, is it always a healthy push, or can it sometimes be a bit too competitive in the gym?
These days it's a healthy push. These days we try our best to help each other and even sort of coach each other in a way while we're sparring, you know, other people. We don't do that much sparring with each other anymore, especially obviously for this camp with me fighting a southpaw and him fighting an orthodox. These days it's very healthy the way we push each other. Early days when we're a bit younger, not so much. We'd our sparring sessions would end up us wrestling on the floor and trying to take our gloves off and kill each other. But I think we've matured a lot since those days, and we realise now that it's not each other we need to beat. It's, you know, the rest of the people in our separate division. So we help each other as much as we can these days, and there's no doubt that it's been a huge advantage and helped us get to the level we are today.
And my final real question for you, Andrew, I wanted to ask, will you be in each other's corners? Obviously, he's just a week before yours.
Yeah, we will. We've you know, organised things well that I'm going to fly one of my sparring partners with us, just a short flight, an hour or so to California, and finish my preparation after Jason's weigh-in. I'll do my final sparring session, and then I'll be in Jason's corner on fight night to watch him achieve his dream, and obviously help him get the job done as best I can. And get to see that very special moment that he's worked very, very hard for a long time. And I just know that's just going to give me even more motivation to get the job done myself a week later. There's no way I could miss it. I have to be there. I'd be burning up too much energy not being there, and I think that would be something that I'd regret if I didn't go. So we're making it work. It's only a short flight. It's not going to affect me. So looking forward to being there and watching him get the job done. And then, yes, you'll be in my corner the week later to help me get the job done as well. So it's going to be a special moment for both of us.
That's absolutely beautiful. I'm really happy to hear that. I wasn't sure you'd be able to go out there. Obviously, I know that the flight is short, thank God. But how amazing to both be in each other's corner. That's excellent. And just finally, Andrew, before I let you go, just if you've got any closing words just to the listeners that will listen to this from all over the world, if you want to sign out with a little message before we let you go, take it away, my friend. The floor's yours.
Just thank you. Firstly, thank you for your time. But yeah, thank you to everyone from all over the world who's shown me support in the lead up to this fight and throughout my career. And just make sure you tune in. I know a lot of people are going to be watching the Lomachenko-Haney card anyway, but make sure you tune in early to catch myself and Nakatani fight, because I really believe it is going to be an exceptional fight. I think our styles will clash perfectly, and I think it's going to be a very, very good fight for the fans to watch. And obviously a very, very special moment in my life. So I'm really, really just can't wait now. We're only a couple of weeks to go, and it's been a long time coming, nearly 20 years of hard work and dedication for this moment, and going to make sure that it was all worth it.
There we go. Listen, Andrew, it's always a pleasure speaking with you, my man. Best of luck for May 20th in Vegas, and God willing, the next time we do an interview, I'll be introducing you as a two-time super flyweight champion of the world, my friend. Speak soon.
Sounds good, mate. I like the sound of that. Sounds good, and yeah, thank you again, mate, and we'll talk soon.
Okay, now it's time for part two on this week's show. This part, of course, the news part of the show. We're going to start with this one here. There's about three pieces of news. We're going to start with this one, like I say. June 17th on Matt Eubank Jr., Liam Smith 2 undercard. It's going to obviously be live on Sky Sports box office in Manchester. On the undercard, we're going to see Natasha Jonas. She'll be defending her WBC, WBO and IBF and Ring Magazine super welterweight world titles. No opponent just yet for her, but another addition on the undercard is Mark Heffron steps in against Zach Chelly. That one there for the British super middleweight title, which of course belongs currently to Mark Heffron. Really happy for Zach Chelly to get an opportunity like that. Obviously last time out beat Anthony Sims Jr. Beat him, looked really good in that fight, obviously, and yeah, just on a bit of a run at the minute as well. You know, he's got 6 wins in a row, beating some good fighters in that time, a couple of undefeated guys as well, back-to-back. So he deserves at least a shot here at the British champion, which is Mark Heffron. So I think that's a cracking fight there as well. Moving on to the other piece of news that we have, Matchroom and DAZN have inked a 3-year extension to the USA and Mexico broadcast deal. So basically, just means that, you know, they've put a 3-year extension on their broadcast deal in the US and Mexico, which I'm not entirely sure makes much sense for UK, UK subscribers or whatever. I don't know if they're kind of hesitant to commit long term with that, or possibly that the contracts expire at different times, and maybe that's why, you know, they haven't done that yet. But anyway, it's good stuff, I guess, for the US and Mexican fight fans that subscribe to DAZN. And then finally, the final piece of news to mention, we're going to see on May the 27th on the Luis Alberto Lopez, Michael Conlon on that undercard there, we're going to see Anthony Kakachi return to the ring. He gets in with Damian Rozinski, who's 26-2 with 2 draws. That one's for the IBO World Super Featherweight title. Rozinski from Poland. We're also going to see Pierce O'Leary as well fight for a title here. It's for the WBC International Super Lightweight title. I've got a feeling he already owns that belt, but he gets in with guy from Romania, Alin Ciorecci, I think his name is, 17-3, and Nick Ball as well. I really enjoy watching Nick Ball. He's 17-0. He gets in there with Ludumo Lamarti, who is 21-0 with a draw. It's for the WBC silver featherweight title. Ludumo Lamarti, I remember him beating who did he beat? He beat someone a while back. I think he upset the apple cart actually by beating them. I've definitely seen that name before. I just can't really think where. But anyways, I think he was world ranked or something a while back. Probably still is world ranked. But anyway, somebody's O must go. Should be a good one there. So three good fights there added to that undercard there. Again, the date for that is May the 27th in Belfast. Should be a good one, shaping up quite well there. And moving on to the preview part of the show, we're going to start here with a card that takes place tomorrow night at the Magna Centre in Rotherham, Yorkshire, United Kingdom over here. It's a Dennis Hobson show. We're going to see Tommy Frank, 15-2 with a draw, defending his British flyweight title over 12 rounds against Jay Harris, friend of the show, 19-3, former world title challenger. All the best there to Jay Harris. I'm quite confident he'll win. His form hasn't been great, though, of late, and that has to be said. You know, he boxed tremendously against Julio Cesar Martinez, even though he lost. But then since then, hasn't really looked like the same fighter. It's almost as if, you know, Martinez took something out of him, which is perfectly understandable. You know, he took a lot of shots that night. But, yeah, just hasn't really looked the same. I mean, he beat Marcel Braithwaite. That was a decent win. But, you know, he's very skillful, Jay Harris, so that was kind of to be expected. But then the knockout loss to Ricardo Sandoval, the knockout loss after that to Hector Calixto, that's two back-to-back knockout losses that he suffered, and he's only come back with one win since. You know, he knocked out Alejandro Torres, who was 2-11, and then he gets in here with Tommy Frank. So it's like his first proper fight against a decent person since being knocked out back-to-back. You know, so he's had a tough time, and one of the times he got knocked out, I think it was the second one, he got knocked out by a Mexican, and that was a bit of a theme with British boxers for a while, that we were having these obscure Mexicans come over here and knock our fighters out. And actually, that's also what happened to Tommy Frank as well. He flew a Mexican over by the name of Rosendo Guarneros, who came over here, boxed him in December 2020 in the Sheffield Arena car park, and, you know, made Tommy Frank retire on his stall. They had a rematch, and Tommy Frank lost a split decision, so that's where his two losses have come from. And again, he's not in great form, because in his very last fight, he drew with Craig Derbyshire, who's a bit of a journeyman. They drew a split draw over 12 rounds. Craig Derbyshire, his record at the time, 8-28 with 3 draws. So, yeah, both guys not in the best of form. I'm still expecting Jay Harris to have enough, though, to beat Tommy Frank. It's not like Tommy Frank's a big puncher or nothing like that, so I'm expecting Jay Harris to win that one, probably on points, to be honest with you. Moving now, though, to the 801 Event Center in Salt Lake City, Utah. I don't think we've been here before, but it's again on Friday, tomorrow. Over here, we're going to see a prospect by the name of John Bryant, 7-0. He's in a 6-rounder here against former world champion, friend of the show, DeMarcus Chop Chop Corley. 52-34 with a draw these days, DeMarcus Corley. Sadly, obviously, he's another one of the many, many fighters that have gone on way too long in the sport of boxing. And, you know, he kind of knows what his job is now. It's to turn up, hopefully not get knocked out, and lose against these prospects. We've seen it time and time again. I actually thought he was retired, because he hasn't been fighting as often. Like in 2018, he had about 5 or 6 fights, and then he just had one in 2019, one in 2021. He was out the ring for 2.5 years. And then, 2.5 years. One fight in 2019. He came back in 2021, October 2021. Then he came back and fought on the exact same date, but in 2022. So he had a fight a year later. So, yeah, like I say, very inactive, and he's back here. He's been out of the ring for 7 months, so it's a quicker turnaround than he's been recently having. But, yeah, again, I think he knows what he's here for. 48 years of age now, Chop Chop. All the best to him, though. And moving now to the big one. It goes down at the Estadio Akron in Jalisco, Mexico, over here. It's going to be live, of course, on the Zone. We're going to start with the undercard. Friend of the show, former WBC light heavyweight world champion Alexander Gvozdik, 18-1, gets in there with Rickards Bolotniks, 19-6 with a draw. That's over 10 there. I think that's going to be quite interesting, to be honest with you, because Bolotniks should be in relatively good shape. He was supposed to fight Craig Richards a few months ago. Probably a few weeks ago, and I think Richards pulled out. I think he was ill or whatever, and yeah, obviously, he would have been in good shape for that fight. He always comes and gives it a good go. And he's getting in there with a very inactive version of Gvozdik, obviously, because we haven't seen much of him. I think he's had just the one comeback fight since taking God knows how long off. I do want to just double check that. Yeah, he returned to the ring, didn't he, after 3.5 years out, and he come back just back in February and went 6 rounds with a guy who was 20-34 with 2 draws, and that guy had been stopped 11 times. So yeah, he did all six with him. He won every round, don't get me wrong, but it's a bit of a jump up from that to this. Rikard Bolotnik's, who's a bit inactive himself, to be honest, hasn't boxed in 13 months, but in his last fight was able to beat an undefeated fighter who was 11-0. Previous to that, obviously went 11 rounds with Josh Buatsi. And then previous to that, had a heck of a run, beating up a lot of, British and Irish, European fighters. Obviously Stephen Ward, Hosea Burton, Serge Michel, good fighters. He was on a bit of a run. So yeah, it's a really good fight. It's a kind of really strange one, but I love a strange fight, and this is that. Elsewhere on the card as well, we're going to see, this is part of the undercard, Gabriel Valenzuela, 26-3 with a draw, knocked out Yves Ulysse Jr. in just one round back in February. That was a huge, huge shock to me when he did that. And also, he's the same guy that got a win a few years ago against Robbie Davies Jr. He is back. He gets in with Steve Spark, who's 16-2. Obviously, last time was able to get the disqualification win against Montana Love, where Montana Love seemingly threw him over the top rope in that crazy fight that they had. And then Montana Love cost me my parlay for doing that. I was fuming with him. But yeah, both guys share that common opponent in Montana Love. Obviously, Steve Spark won by disqualification, and Gabriel Valenzuela actually lost a unanimous decision over 12. And Love was down as well in that fight, I should mention. But yeah, should be a good one, because I felt Steve Spark, even though obviously he won by disqualification, obviously dropped Montana Love, and he looked really big, really strong at the weight, really solid, you know. So I thought, wow, this guy's coming with a lot of heat, and here we see him on a really massive card in Mexico, you know. I think he's been given a fantastic opportunity really here to shine on a massive stage, you know, to beat a Mexican in Mexico on a Canelo undercard. What more do you want? You know, I think it's going to be a really, really, really good fight, that one there. So yeah, I think there's potentially a lot of good action on the undercard. And talking of another, that one, by the way, for the WBA Intercontinental Super Lightweight title. And talking of another, hopefully good action fight on the undercard, we're going to see Julio Cesar Martinez, 19-2, defending his WBC World Flyweight title against Ronal Batista, who's 15-2. The two losses came to Mikael Aloyan, which isn't a bad one, and Leostas Nunes, but that one was back in 2017. I'll be completely honest with you, I haven't actually seen this guy fight. I'm just looking into his record there. The loss to Aloyan over 12 rounds isn't really a bad one, because Aloyan was a really good amateur. But this is the big boys now, you know. This is the big boys. Julio Cesar Martinez should win relatively comfortably, and I think he probably still will. But again, his form hasn't been great, you know. I remember when he had it was only a two-round fight, but he was having a few problems with McWilliams Arroyo. Then obviously got completely, completely dominated by Chocolatito. Like, honestly, that was just crazy. Chocolatito was just toying with him over 12 rounds, completely beat him down demoralizingly. And then the fight after that, the majority decision win for him over 12 rounds against Samuel Carmona. He didn't look too good there. And he gets in with Ronal Batista. Still should have too much really for him, but whether or not he'll knock him out, I'm not entirely sure. But yeah, all the best to him. And then yeah, all eyes to the main event for the IBF, WBA, WBC and WBO World Super Middleweight titles, the undisputed titles. Canelo Alvarez, 58-2 with two draws. He steps in there with friend of the show, the Islington icon, Mr. John Ryder, 32-5. It's over 12 rounds, of course. We had John on the show about 3-4 weeks ago. I've had a good relationship with John Ryder for many, many, many years. You know, one of the coolest guys as well. I really do like him. But obviously, got to be realistic here. He's massively, massively up against it, against, you know, Canelo, who aside from that one bad night against Dimitri Bivol, still looks, you know, every part of a pound for pound best fighter in the world, really. So yeah, coming off that win last time out against Golovkin, not the fight that really anyone wanted to see, but here he gets back in a fight that, again, not many people really wanted to see. You know, some people are not interested in this fight against John Ryder, and I can understand why. John Ryder, you know, hasn't hasn't really got the big names on his record, but to be honest, he has. You know, he's boxed a hell of a lot of good fighters, and, you know, he's on a heck of a run as well. I've said it for many, many years. He's probably the best or the most improved British fighter in recent years, and he's on, you know, a massive run. And all of his losses have been very controversial, apart from his knockout loss to Nick Blackwell. They've been very controversial. The Billy Joe Saunders one was really close. Jack Armfield one was really close. Rocky Fielding one was really close. Callum Smith one was really close. All of these obviously on points, all over 12 rounds as well. So he's banked a lot of rounds in that time. But again, he was on a heck of a run, you know. His run has been interrupted by a lot of poor scorecards, unfortunately. But even just leading into this fight, since controversially losing to Callum Smith, where most people thought he won, you know, he went out there to the States, beat Mike Guy, then he went out to a really weird card in I can't even remember what country it was in now. I think it was like Austria. Boxed Joseph Jerko, beat him, and then, yeah, beat Danny Jacobs, and then beat Zach Parker. So he's coming off the two best wins of his career officially. And yeah, here we go. He gets in with Saul Canelo Alvarez. I don't want to waffle on too much, but yeah, no one can begrudge John Ryder this opportunity. Obviously, it's, I'm assuming, going to be the biggest, highest payday of his career. I think he deserves it. I've said before, he's like the Matchroom front bumper, as I'd say, or the Matchroom battering ram, for people that don't know what a front bumper is. Like, you know, like he's just thrown in head first to these tough fights, and he's supposed to lose a lot of them, but he wins and wins and wins, and yeah, he's given everyone a really hard fight. Yeah, but obviously this is, again, the big league. He is definitely really confident in himself. And do you know what? He's this close. He's 12 rounds away from becoming, you know, a Cinderella story. This guy, if he were to pull this off, you know, there's going to be movies made about John Ryder. And that is how close he is. He's within touching distance of that becoming a reality. If he were to win this fight here, to think he once upon a time got knocked out at British title level to Nick Blackwell, who of course ended up in a coma, to Chris Eubank Jr. And to think he's gone on from that, got himself to a world title fight, boxing Canelo in Canelo's backyard in a homecoming. You know, Canelo, I think, by the sounds of some of his comments, seems like he's overlooking John Ryder, and I can understand why. He is a humongous, humongous, humongous underdog. And my prediction for the fight is John Ryder's going to get stopped. I hope I'm wrong. I really hope I'm wrong. I've been wrong about John Ryder in the past. You know, I like to be honest with the guys that I like, and everyone, to be honest with you. And there's fights before I thought, ooh, I'm not sure if he's going to win that. The Zach Parker fight last time out was the same. I wasn't sure he was going to win, but he did. Before that, Danny Jacobs, I wasn't sure he was going to win, but he did. Callum Smith, I wasn't sure he was going to win, but most people felt he nicked it. Jamie Cox, I thought was going to be a tough fight. He blitzed him in two rounds. Rocky Fielding, I thought was going to be a tough fight. He lost, but again, a lot of people felt he nicked it. Honestly, the names go on and on. I'd love to see him do it, but like I say, a huge ask. And before I keep going on like a broken record here, I'm going to come to you, Eddie. I don't know what you've seen of John Ryder, but God, there's no one who deserves this shot more than him, I think. And I'm just so pleased he gets this payday and this opportunity. But boy, oh boy, it's a mammoth task.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy that the deck is stacked against him the way it is. But, you know, you got to love the opportunity for him. You know what I mean? A guy who's always been on the ass end of everything seems to get he's getting a great opportunity. And even in those other fights, he had opportunities to win, even though he got the bad end of the decisions and things like that. So, you know, you can look at it like, damn, it's a tough ass to him, for him to be, you know, to win the fight with Canelo, but him just being here is and is something to marvel at for him. You know what I mean? He's a good guy, like you say. And I mean, I haven't seen much of him. I don't know what kind of fighter he is, really. I haven't seen anything of him, to be honest. And but, you know, just from what you're saying, Joe, makes you want to root for a guy like that in a situation like this. It reminds me of my situations, you know, things where, you know, I fought, you know, many times, you know, on the B side, and I kind of made a career of kind of, you know, being a spoiler. But, you know, if you have the ability, you have the desire to want to win, you have the confidence, you know, you can do it regardless of how big the task is. It can be done. You know what I mean? If there's an opportunity to do it, it can be done. So, you know, as great as Canelo is, and, you know, you can't take anything away from the fact that he's just, you know, a marvelous fighter, you know, in many different ways. But you kind of want to see a guy like this upset the apple cart in a sense, because, you know, like you say, he's a good guy, hardworking guy. You know what I mean? Been around for a while, he's gotten the opportunities, but hasn't got the wins. In most of those cases, you kind of want to see him get the win this time. But this is a tough one to think he's going to get the win in this. So, I mean, I'm pretty sure Canelo's going to stop him. I don't really know what his chin is like. I haven't really seen much of him, so I can't really say how long he can last. You know, I would say, you know, Canelo probably mid to late rounds. That's a safe bet, in my opinion. But, yeah, looking to see what happens. Hopefully John Ryder, you know, at least last the distance, you know, and on the high end wins. That will be a very, very interesting result.
I'd love it to happen. When I spoke to John a few weeks ago, I said, surely, John, this is the biggest fight in terms of, you know, marketability, in terms of, yeah, money, really. This is the biggest money fight that could have ever been presented to you at any point in your career. His answer was, no, it's not. The rematch will be. So he's very confident. I loved his answer, and I'd love to see him do it. Honestly, if he did it by some crazy way, I mean, there's been bigger upsets, of course, in boxing history. If he can do it, honestly, he becomes a British boxing legend. And, you know, finally is crowned a world champion. He'd be an undisputed world champion. Obviously, he should already have been a world champion, to be totally honest with you. But, yeah, he would become, you know, a superstar. And movies would be made about him if he were to pull it off. So all the best to John Ryder. I will be praying that he can do this. He's a top, top quality guy, and you know, deserves nothing but the best in this upcoming fight. And credit to him as well for showing the balls to go over there to Mexico in the Lion's Den, a long way from home. You know, for Canelo to really, you know, showcase in front of his fans, that's what the plan is. He's there to ruin those plans. All the best to him. Moving on now, though, to the KRK Urolets in Ekaterinburg, Russia. Over here, we're going to see Magomed Kurbanov, 24-0. He gets in there with Michel Soro, who is 35-3 with two draws. That's over 12 rounds there. Michel Soro from France gets in with Kurbanov. I feel like I've definitely seen Kurbanov before. Is he the guy that got the gift decision against Liam Smith? I think he's the guy that might have got that gift decision. Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did back in May 2021. Racked up a couple wins since then. Gets in with Michel Soro. Okay. And then, yeah, moving to the final card to mention. It takes place at the Results World Arena in Birmingham, West Midlands. It's going to be live on Sky Sports. Yeah, let's start with the undercard over here. We are going to see Ben Whittaker. It's good to see him back, actually. Obviously, you know, medalist in the Olympic Games, and he's been out the ring for, I think, just under a year with an injury. And yeah, he's back in a sixth rounder against Jordan Grant, who we saw recently fight Aaron McKenna. I think that one was on Sky as well. So yeah, Aaron McKenna couldn't get him out of there. And yeah, Ben Whittaker gets his chance. He's also gone the distance as well with Tommy Fury in the past, just over four rounds. And his one stoppage loss came to John Doherty in two rounds back in February 2022. So yeah, Ben Whittaker, I've got a sneaky suspicion that this one might go to points. I think you can triple your money with that one. But again, Yeah, I'm not saying it's a super safe bet. I mean, I just think there's a chance it could happen. I think Jordan Grant is a bit tough, and Ben Whitaker's coming, like I say, off an injury. He's been out the ring for quite a while. What else do we have on the card? Shakan Pitters, he's 17-2, the former British light heavyweight champion. He gets in with Joel McIntyre, who's 20-6. That one there's over 8 rounds. I'm a bit kind of unsure of how this one's going to go. Obviously, Shakan Pitters for me is the big favourite, but Joel McIntyre in his last fight went 10 with Ricky Summers. That was really no surprise. But he got banged out in just 2 rounds by Lyndon Arthur back in December of 2022, so still not too long ago. Shakan Pitters obviously isn't the biggest puncher, but at times he does look like a bit of a puncher, so I guess it kind of matters which version of himself turns up. Is he going to look to try and get him out or what? He's coming off a points loss last time out to Dan Aziz. Haven't seen him since then. That was back in September of last year. So yeah, I think I'd be almost 100% confident in Shakan Pitters to get the victory, but by which method, I'm not entirely sure. Elsewhere on the card as well, we're going to see the rematch between Corey Gibbs, 17-1, and Jimmy First, who's 14-1. This is that rematch that I'm quite happy is taking place. Corey Gibbs lost his O to Jimmy First. They were both undefeated in that first fight. They've now both got losses in their rematch, but obviously Corey Gibbs lost to Jimmy First simply because he had a point deducted in round 4, 5, and 6 because his gum shield kept coming out. It wasn't intentional. It wasn't like tactical or nothing. He was winning the rounds, definitely winning the rounds, but his gum shield kept falling out. It was a weird size and it was too small for his mouth, so it kept coming out. He kept losing 10-8 rounds, and then Jimmy First, who I think was 40 or 41 years of age in his first proper fight on TV, managed to upset the odds and win. And yeah, he gets in here with Corey Gibbs in a rematch. He has had one fight in the interim period. He lost his O, a points loss over 10 rounds to Josh Padley. Corey Gibbs, though, goes right back in as the favourite. I'd expect him to win probably on points. It's over 8 rounds there. Moving up the card once again, this one I think is quite interesting, actually. Tyler Denny, he is 16-2 with 3 draws. He gets in with Macaulay McGowan, 17-3 with 2 draws. It's over 10 rounds. I tell you what, I've got this weird feeling that Tyler Denny might record his first stoppage win here. He's never knocked anyone out in his 16 wins, and I know it sounds mad. He gets in with Macaulay McGowan, who's got 3 losses, all on points, never been knocked out. So what is the indication that he's going to get knocked out here? Again, it's a bit of a punt. It really is a bit of a punt. But in Macaulay McGowan's last fight, he drew with Farhad Saad in France. And he should have won. 100% he should have won. And I backed him to win that fight. And sadly, he got a draw, which was a bit unfortunate. But he was hurt by Farhad Saad, who again had no knockouts to his name. And I've just noticed in Tyler Denny's recent performances that I've seen, he seems like he's a bit more kind of aggressive. He seems like he's trying to really press for stoppages. And I think that he might be able to do it against Macaulay McGowan. So, yeah, again, it's a bit of a shot in the dark. It's not like it's you know, something I'm super confident in, but I just think it's possible. You know, Macaulay McGowan obviously went 8 rounds last time. He was really, really tired by the late part of that fight, round 6, round 7, round 8. He was quite tired. And prior to that, his last 3 fights prior to that had all been 4-rounders. All of them went the distance. So, yeah, he gets in with Tyler Denny over 10 rounds. It's not like he hasn't done 10 rounds. He went 10 rounds back to back to back in 2020 to 2022. He had 3 fights, went 10 rounds in all 3 of them, but lost all 3 of them. So yeah, I think Tyler Denny could get a late stoppage here. So yeah, I think rounds kind of 6 to 10 for the Tyler Denny stoppage could be very interesting and would pay really well. Elsewhere on the card as well, Lauren Price, 3-0. She fights for the vacant British welterweight title against Kirsty Bavinton, who's 7-3 with 2 draws. I think it's the first British title fight for 2 women at welterweight for like God knows how long. But yeah, credit to Boxer for pushing for this. I'm not entirely sure the full facts and figures and all the rest of it. But yeah, Lauren Price, 3-0, only got one KO. I'm expecting her to probably win this one on points against Kirsty Babington. Hasn't been stopped in any of her three losses. Been in there with a couple of decent punchers like Sandy Ryan, Sherelle Brown, Candy Wyatt, I think's a little bit of a puncher. And yeah, you know, hasn't been bothered by any of those. So I'd expect Lauren Price to win that one. It's obviously over 10 twos though. So perhaps maybe late, maybe I'm going to stick with points. Elsewhere on the card once again as well, another one that I think is a decent price here. Sean McComb, 15-1. It's for the WBO European Super Lightweight title. He gets in with Casey Benjamin, 16-2 with a draw. It's over 10 rounds there. Again, one outcome I completely cannot see happening is Sean McComb getting a stoppage. I know that might sound laughable because, you know, it's not like he really knocks people out anyway, but Casey Benjamin's really, really tough. Showed that in his last fight, went 12 rounds with Dalton Smith. Gave him a good fight as well. Lost on one of the cards just by 1 point, but Dalton Smith, I think, had been quite sick the week of the fight or the week before the fight, and that was the excuse for that. But anyways, Casey Benjamin's a good fighter. Lost one fight early on to Sam Evans. I think that was one of those prize fighter format things. You can't really read into those 3-round losses. Drew as well with Danny Ball over 10 rounds back in 2019, but since then, again, went on quite a good streak and all the rest of it. But yeah, lost last time out to Dalton Smith. Sean McComb, I still have question marks over him from that time when he quit against Gavin Gwynn. But yeah, he just hasn't really impressed me much, to be honest with you. So I think that there's smart money for Casey Benjamin. He's the slight underdog. It's pretty much a 50-50 fight, really, but he is a slight underdog, so you can just a bit more than double your money. I think Casey Benjamin could pull that one off, but yeah, I think it's probably going to go the distance, so it could be Sean McComb to win on points, or maybe Casey Benjamin points, or potentially even a stoppage for Casey Benjamin. But yeah, I just can't see Sean McComb winning that one by knockout. And then the main event, the final fight to mention, Josh Boat. See, 16-0 in a 12-rounder here against Pavel Stepien, who is 18-0 with a draw. This is the guy that was supposed to take on Callum Smith. Callum Smith pulled out the fight, ended up not happening. Josh Boatzi has not only gone to Ben Shalom and Boxer, he's left Eddie Hearn, he's also jacked the opponent. So, you know, the opponent that they had for Callum Smith. So anyways, he gets in with Pavel Stepien. 12 KOs from his 18 wins from Poland. One draw. The draw was to Marek Matia, who isn't really particularly great. Craig Richards knocked him out in 6 rounds. I remember being at that fight. Yeah, you know, you look through the rest of his record. He ended up beating Marek Matia when they did a rematch. He beat him on a split decision over 10. So he was able to avenge that minor blemish, that little draw there. But other than that, you know, the names on his record are completely unrecognizable. You know, there's nothing there to say, whoa, this guy is going to be a handful for Josh Boatzi. And once again, it's another frustrating fight, really, for Josh Boatzi. It's a fight that no one asked for, no one's really interested in. And once again, it's just a reminder that this 2016 Olympian has really failed to get moving like the rest of the guys that you know, were from that crop of Olympians that turned pro. I like Boatzi, obviously. I've said many, many times we're from the same estate in Croydon, and I knew him before he was even boxing, as far as I was aware. I remember turning on the TV and seeing him on the TV, you know, at the Olympic Games, thinking, what the hell, this guy's a boxer? I didn't know this. And that was it, you know. He's turned pro, he's obviously undefeated, fantastic. But yeah, it's been quite frustrating. I don't know who he's training with as well at the minute. I know he was with Virgil Hunter. I don't know if that's still going on or what. Virgil Hunter's obviously had some poor health in recent times. A couple of his fighters have left him. I don't know what Boatzi's doing. But yeah, all the best to him, obviously, but he just needs to get going. You know, there's all this talk about all these big fights for him. You know, Callum Smith, Baturbiev, Anthony Yard, and they go and fight complete unknowns, really, and I don't know where they've got this guy from. Like I say, I'd never heard of him until he was listed to fight Callum Smith, and people were outraged that Callum Smith was going to fight him, and yeah, people are still outraged that Josh Boazzi's going to fight him, because no one's really interested. But hopefully he bangs him out nice and early, and hopefully we get a big fight next. But I feel like I've said that for the last few fights for Boazzi, unfortunately. The only real opponent, I guess, that I kind of quite highly respect is Craig Richards, who he boxed last time out, but again, that was a year ago, you know, and he's failed to really capitalize on that. Now he gets in with Stepien, so yeah, it is what it is. But anyways, that brings the preview part to a close. In part one, we did the review part, we welcomed our special guest. In part two, I've just wrapped up the news and the preview part. The final thing for me to do is to come in with the outro, which I'll do in just a few seconds. Okay, and this wraps up episode 394 of the Box Hard Podcast. I've been your host, Joey Coastman. Eddie Chambers has been with me for the duration of the show. A huge shout out to this week's special guest, the former WBA Super Flyweight World Champion, Mr. Andrew Maloney. The biggest thanks of all, though, goes out to you, the listeners. Thanks once again for tuning into this week's show. That's about everything, though, from myself. Enjoy your weekends, people. Stay safe, and we shall see you all again same time next week.